found this in Ganarum. Ganamir.
What is it?
Well, it's
Sigmaholics.
I missed. I died. I was pierced until I realized.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your Klingon host, David Duncan. With me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
And we also have the Kuvak Mach.
Faith of the Lost. Or Faith Hertzberg.
Faith of the Lost.
I've been running back-to-back tournaments.
Oh, no. She's lost in time, people.
Her screen name has interfered with her actual name.
Doesn't know.
Right. Too many times.
We are at the final death throes of the Klingon episodes. I don't know if...
Or
we...
is it?
This is... I've decided this is like the... these four episodes are sort of like the 4 days of the bachelor party that Dwarf has to go through with his friends.
Yes, exactly. The first one, you know, starved ourselves.
Then we then we bleed ourselves out.
Then we hang over an open coal pit.
Yeah. Oh, it gets better and better. This is the marriage of the Klingons. Yeah, no, but this is great. We are at the last episode. We are talking about some of the final episodes that kind of define what Klingons are.
So was there any Star Trek news this week?
Didn't pick up on any.
Idris Elba was confirmed with that video they released.
Right. We talked about it on the Facebook page, yeah. Idris Elba did a little spin breakdance.
He was breaking it down.
Yeah. That was actually a cool little thing. It's a nifty thing to raise money too. You know, $10.
$10 gets you like 10 chances to win. $100 gets you 100 chances to be in it.
Right.
It's like they throw all these things into a jar and they pick a name, I guess.
Right. Right.
It seems like a really cool thing. I know they did the exact same thing with Star Wars. Episode 7, they had the same Omaze giveaway type thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Did they? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was the second time I've officially seen Omaze.
I don't pay attention to Star Wars.
Yeah, so...
hey, at least he's honest about it.
Trick.
Trick yourself before you wreck yourself.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself. All right, so...
Last time I got beamed away during the talk of... Sword of Kaelas.
Is that the last time we talked about this? Man,
I don't believe the Sword of Kaelas was like the One Ring.
How do you know? You can't scientifically define that.
There's nothing in Star Trek that's magical.
It really was or not. Well, it doesn't mean they didn't
they
have
the Barge of the Dead.
That's not magical. That's religious.
My mind, they're one and the same.
Supernatural and magic isn't the same.
What? All right, I'm not getting into a Faith debate, but I'm sorry, Faith. I don't mean by you.
We'll fight over her.
I just think
it's a fight to the
we'll
death.
We'll shout them down together. It's
my
okay.
feeling is that's the Klingon mumbo jumbo, and we have our own mumbo jumbo, and mumbo jumbo is what you believe in. I'm not going to judge anybody's mumbo jumbo. I don't want to go on the Barge of the Dead. I don't see what the difference is. So.
Well, it's just the Like, there's lots of extenuating circumstances for them to act the way they did. Worf was injured. He had been just removed from his – kicked out of his race after just getting back in like a couple years before.
He does it all the time. It's like a weekly thing for him.
I mean, honestly, it's like his cleansing ritual or something.
Yeah,
like,
he's
getting
like,
kicked
like,
out of his race for holding on to honor.
He's like,
Yeah, let's do a full reassessment
of
everything that I am.
Prune juice, and I'm going to get a colonic.
But the thing is, as we see later in this episode, we see Kor is probably also going through the early stages of Klingon Alzheimer's in this episode. So he's also got the delusions of grandeur. So he wants to be emperor. Worf wants to be emperor because he wants to do anything to be back with his race.
So that's not
the stakes of
a very Worf-like aspect because you see Worf throughout all this time.
She's right.
Lower position.
Damn Worf, right. Damn Worf, straight face.
He's a humble man.
He is a humble, honorable man.
He screwed himself over and over and over again for the sake of honor. He would not do that. I mean, he is the epitome of a, of what a samurai does for his lords.
You
for his
preach, girl.
He's
tired. He's tired. He's injured, and his pride and his self being is injured. And I think he would do anything at that point to maybe be back with his people. And the fact that Kor is there and Kor is kind of going crazy and egging him on isn't helping his, you know, mental health. If they had Ezri there, maybe she could have helped balance everything out.
No, forget Ezri.
This is pre-Ezri.
Because honestly, he had the blood of his beloved on his hands, and he did not lose his crap then.
Yeah.
So we can say that fatigued and all this. No.
Dude broke his back. A damn barrel rolled on him.
And he wanted to kill himself for that, and he kept getting told no.
He didn't say he was going to become emperor. So, all right.
Well, no, but he wasn't. You know, he didn't have the means. The Sword of Kaelas represented something.
All right, I'm going to just
really had the means anyways, because someone like him that was that dishonored would have only gained the face of his honor. That would have been it.
Yeah, and I my feeling in the very end is that maybe it didn't have a magical property, but I think it's like anything. It kind of could, like, you know, it just kind of the power of it kind of fucked with their head.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the what it could do for them, messed with their head. But it wasn't like it was magical. It was like it was the status of
all
it.
All I'm saying is that they were both forged in the volcano. Everyone went fucking apeshit every time.
Yeah, but the ring was made by a Dark Lord, and the other one was made by Jesus, or Klingon Jesus, Kaelas. Yeah, Kaelas, Klingon Jesus. So, I mean, like, Klingon Jesus and Dark Lord aren't exactly the same
thing.
Well,
no, but if you were chaotic evil.
Okay, if it was made by Grakal,
no,
then maybe it would have been evil.
What side of that faction you're standing
Yeah, if you were.
That's
if
one
you...
thing. If you're evil, it's another thing entirely.
No, if it was made by Theklar, then I could see.
No, but if you're a goblin in Middle Earth, you know, the person who forged the ring,
they're still gonna call him Dark Lord because
they're gonna call
Lord.
Him the Jesus of the Dark Lord, dark powers, because you pray to that god. Okay,
so the power of the powers.
Yeah,
you don't want to piss off the PT.
And he was like Jesus. He was dead and he came back.
More than once.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Dark Lords are also coming back. Anyway, Dark Jesus, not
it's
Dark Jesus.
It's the future of the PTB. They screw with them all.
I'm just sad I got beamed out at that point. That way we didn't have that this heated discussion now, which is what I'm always looking for when we're doing Synthaholics.
Not play with the controls. We have them set that way for a reason.
We turned your mic off for a reason. Anyways.
I see how it is. I bring us all together for this happy family, and you turn me off.
Moving on.
Apocalypse Rising.
Deep Space Nine. Apocalypse
Continued.
Rising. Yeah, right. Exactly. we get the idea that possibly that Galron could be a changeling.
A changeling. Yeah, this is like neck deep in the Dominion War.
I thought it was a little stretch that Odo would be like, when I was in the faceless, formless mass of my people.
The giant bucket.
Because
that's how we sleep. Gelatinous
mass. We're all kind
of big thimble.
It's like we were all melding into each other. It's like instead of Vulcans have mind melds, Odo's got body
melds.
It's
like liquid space just in one area.
Yeah, exactly. I saw Galron's face and I
Does
knew.
Species 8472 take baths and
that explains a lot about the changelings right there.
They all wake
they
up
take
with
baths and changelings.
What's wrong with the founders?
They all wake
now
up
we
with
know.
Cold slurs on their face. Oh, fuck.
That's what happened to Carrie.
That's why they change forms so often. It's to cover the STDs.
Oh, my God.
Stay ahead of it.
I got chlamydia.
At least they didn't freeze Odo into his permanent body with an STD on his face.
You could have gave me a bigger dick. All right, so.
But he likes bubbles a lot.
Yeah, he does. And he drinks a lot of beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
I like the bubbles.
So,
you know what else blows bubbles?
Anyway, so let's move on to the idea that Galron is possibly a changeling, and Starfleet has this crazy idea to send Benjamin Sisko into the Klingon Empire, the most fortified palace station or everything you want to call it, and have them put up these little mechanical devices.
These scanners that shoot out radiation. It's not enough radiation to kill you the first time.
But the second time it will.
Second time it'll kill you. So does the first time make you sterile and then make you half dead?
Probably.
No. It just makes you dead the second time around because the sterility occurs while you're dying.
Right, exactly.
So the first time doesn't make you sterile?
Microwave.
Well, that sounds safe.
I mean, who wants to be, you know, fertile in Star Trek anyways?
That's a good point. Well, we'll find out somebody does. But anyways, later on. But Sisko, of course, agrees because it's like crazy-ass mission. Sisko's like, yeah, sign me up. And he gets Odo to come with them. Odo's feeling a little not himself.
Odo's like, yeah, you don't need me to do this.
Lost his confidence.
He must have gotten really small whenever they made him do a solid.
Yeah.
They kept his confidence when they gave him back. That's what happened. They kept all of his confidence.
They gave him a small penis, and now he's all like, no, oh, this is all.
Well, with the way he's sulking around, it's like they almost gave him nothing.
Yeah. Little twigs and berries between his legs.
Or like Dogma, where the angel takes off his pants and it's just like a flap of flat skin. It's just like nothing.
Oh, right. Yeah. Could have been. You don't know.
He's like, I can't get with Kira. I'm solid. I can't even do anything.
I can't do anything.
I can't shapeshift.
That's why she lost interest.
That's why I thought Kira loved him so much, honestly. But
I think that's all three of us right there.
Any shape?
And I always thought that Sue Richards, Invisible Girl, probably was like the luckiest girl of the Marvel Universe because she had Mr. Fantastic as a husband. I mean, the thing that guy could do. Holy shit. Well, anyways. We digress. Anyway, so the place is called Tigor. Tigor is the name of the...
Yeah, they're doing this ritual for the Order of the Bat'leth. It's the most best, badassest warriors.
Yeah, these are like the top gun of the warriors.
And you have to get drunk for like 48 hours and still be standing in order to receive this honor.
Right, so it's...
Standing is allowed. Standing is required.
Yeah, so we've got... Sisko, we've got Odo, Miles O'Brien.
Oh, Miles is such a great Klingon. He's like,
man, that guy is ugly as a Klingon.
But Sisko looked badass as a Klingon.
Sisko looks good. Who was the other? Oh, Worf, of course, went. So, so they go there and they get snuck on by bird of prey called that's run by.
Dukat has stolen a bird of prey, and he's got this fancy view screen modifier so he can talk and look like a Klingon, but it gets damaged.
It's damaged.
Because I have to say, the look on his face when he's talking with Kira, when she's talking him into Bari doing this in the first place, and he notes the pregnancy, and he was like, well, whose is that? Oh, it's Miles O'Brien. It's O'Brien's. And the look on his face. Was just priceless.
Yeah.
I had backed that up twice. I was like, yes.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
That was totally awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's always good Dukat get like thrown off, which he often is. So
yeah, but his facial expressions when he's thrown off is so great.
Yeah, absolutely.
How did you do it?
And she doesn't get into
he's
it.
Like,
with
he's
him.
Married and all this.
No, she just had that grin so cool. on her face. Like, yep, I got you.
Yep, O'Brien did it.
So,
although he didn't really. Poor O'Brien.
So they get to Tigor or Tigor, and they get to they get delivered there. Dukat just leaves them. Just takes.
He's
off.
Like, well, you know, if you fail, you're dead. So I don't need to hang around. And if you succeed,
you should get back on your own.
Yeah, they'll be happy.
Figure it out.
It's logical. It's a little cold-hearted, but yes. So they're in the big hall. The Klingons are all headbutting and punching, as we often see Klingons.
Lots of blood wine.
Lots of blood wine. And they're taking some anti-intoxicants or something.
So they don't get drunk.
So they're just drinking and pissing it out all night. General... what's his name?
Martok.
Martok shows up, and he seems like he recognizes
O'Brien.
I know you from somewhere. And O'Brien makes up some place that they might have fought. Mempha or something. That is where they are. Mempha. During the Civil War or something like that. And so they...
Must have been. Yeah,
yeah, that makes sense. And they're all like, we'll drink later and talk about it. And when they're setting up all these little devices for when Galron shows up, obviously there's some issues trying to set it up. And then Galron shows up and, it's just insanity because they actually call up... Benjamin Sisko's Klingon false name, whatever. Yeah. So
it's like, oh, you're Benjamin Sisko. And then they all get caught.
Yeah. Then they all get caught, thrown in jail. And the devices have all been destroyed, so they didn't flood anybody with radiation.
Aww.
Yeah, we didn't see
anything. Everyone's having children tonight.
Yeah, damn. And then, so Martok visits them in jail. And he's like, I've suspected Galron as a changeling for a long time now.
And so he lets them out, except for Odo. Odo kind of hangs behind.
Yeah, because he's like...
Odo's is using his detectivisms.
Yeah, I don't trust you. Which I don't get either, because in the end... Well, we'll talk about it in the end. But So then after they go to basically kill Galron...
Yeah, they go to kill Galron, which is what the changelings want.
Yeah, and... they're going to kill him. Worf goes up to, basically fight him with his...
Mechleth?
Yeah, his little knife there.
Mechleth.
And he's got the Batleth. So it's actually a pretty impressive fight. And Worf actually beats him. But at the last minute, Odo puts together that...
Martok is the changeling.
And Galron is actually the real thing. And he stops him at the last minute and... obviously, Martok gives himself away foolishly. Don't get that at all.
Yeah, that was really weird. He just kind of like comes out and like, as a changeling with his like whippy tentacle arm and starts to strangle or rips someone with his arm. And it's so awesome. Every single Klingon in the entire place pulls up the phaser and
I'll shoot him.
Blasts him. It was so great. It was like. But it doesn't make any sense, because if you go back to the original first season episode, or the second season episode, the first time they go into the Mirror Universe, they shoot Odo with one phaser, and he explodes, like, just instantly. And, like, they shot him with a whole bunch of phasers, and he just kind of melts. I'm just
maybe
like,
he's got some shields or something. I don't know. But, yeah, so
obviously he thought he was invincible.
Yeah. And they get rid of that changeling. It's Galron's actually the real... he promises Worf that he'll next time they meet, it won't be in good circumstances.
Won't be friendly.
And and then they give him a ride home. So the thing that...
they took the short bus, the short bird of prey back to Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, they're like, hey, you want to get my Chevy Camaro and drive you home? So
remember to tuck and roll on the way out. Hold your breath, leaving the airlock.
Just rolls them out.
Yes.
We're not stopping.
The couple things that kind of stand out for this episode is that obviously the Order of the Batleth, these guys, just another group of completely insane, drunken revelries. They might be warriors, but still, it's just enforcing the Klingon
dumbisms.
Yeah, just like let's just all be crazy ass warriors.
It's their version of a fraternity.
Yeah, exactly. Except they kill each other. And,
what? No, it's about the same way fraternities work these days.
Well, to some.
Drink until you're dead.
This one was just interesting. We got to see another aspect of the Klingon, their just boneheadedness. That's part of the new regime of Klingon, where they just stay up, bang heads together, drink a lot, and then participate in some grand ceremony that I don't think any actual Klingons actually have the patience for, given what we've seen of Klingons.
Right. I guess what I was thinking in the end is that that this changeling thing, they're very scared of the changelings, actually. They seem to have, like, an intense fear of them. Like, they won't obviously show fear, but they're, like, really scared of what the changelings could do,
Yeah, just to overthrow the Alpha Quadrant, because they could be and
everywhere.
Everywhere, and anyone.
What I was going to say is that I was surprised that... So the changeling Martok asks or tells Odo he can't come into the hall with the rest of the warriors, you know, when they're going to try to kill Galron. And wouldn't the changeling know that Odo was stripped of his? Or do they have to, like, interface with each other?
I think they have to interface. I don't think he didn't know.
So if he was away
he's,
from
he's been the, playing he's been playing Martok for a really long time. Because the real Martok is locked up
on
that base somewhere.
Yeah, no, I know that. But I guess what I meant was, like, so the changeling that was taking the place of Martok didn't know that Odo had lost his ability to
shift. No, because Martok...
I thought he knew.
No, because the Mart. I mean, he might know what Odo looks like, but he may not realize that it was
to conduct an invasion on that scale and to do what they're doing. They would need a way of communicating other than just integration. So,
well, because this was the first episode,
I just assumed like they were able to communicate with one another, and that he was just. I thought he was giving Odo a chance of redemption.
You could be right, and you could changeling. Be, but she could be right because the other thing I thought about maybe because the changelings aren't supposed to kill each other. Maybe it was like you can't go in there because you're going to die.
Because they might, you know, in his head, they might have done something. Odo could have redeemed himself, and they might have, you know, fixed things for him. But you know, solidarity with your own race or species and whatnot.
I mean, it could be a plot hole because, I mean, this is the first episode of the season. And the previous season, the last thing that happened was Odo was stripped of his changeling powers. And Martok changeling has been Martok changeling since, all the previous season.
You're right, yeah.
So, I mean, like, the Great Link is how they exchange information. They talk about it quite often. And every time, you know, Odo meets a new changeling, he's like, oh, I'm gonna melt on you a little bit so you can melt on me a little bit. And Kira always gets jealous because they're melting on each other.
Yeah. Well, you never melt on me like that.
I
it's like really intimate. It's not like sex, but it's pretty much sex.
It's just mind sex.
And what the other thing is I was going to just bring up is that that Odo had that, and maybe I said before that Odo just said like, oh, I saw Galron's face. And, you know, this is he's a changeling, and like, Sisko and Starfleet's like, yeah, let's go kill Galron or go expose him.
Let's
like,
do that.
Like, just on a hunch, on something you thought you saw, you know.
Odo's reliable, right?
I mean, I know.
Well, usually when his confidence is in place, but obviously right now he's not doing so hot.
Yeah.
But he at least he gets his sleuthing together and figures out that it's Martok. And
yeah, that's a good point. Without him, it wouldn't have actually happened. So.
Yeah, it would have. Galron would have died without Odo.
Right.
Because Worf has no qualms about killing other Klingons.
Technically, isn't this just fixing your mistake at this point? I pointed a finger in the wrong direction. Oh crap! It's somebody else. Hey guys, over here, this way.
No.
So that's kind of that episode. We saw a little bit of a glimpse of episode, like we said, the order the Bat-Leth.
Order of the Bat-Leth.
And you know, just more. We just saw more headbutting and drinking of blood wine. So
yeah, they were just kind of like you know doing their brain. It was just interesting to see the ritual or the you know how they party or whatever or. That's pretty much the big takeaway from that.
How they stand around and do nothing at all but drink.
Yeah, and then fight each other for standing too close to the blood wine.
You're standing too close to my blood wine. This is my.
They're
blood
just
wine.
Like animals. This just
felt
it's so,
like totally fit in.
So sad.
Right.
I'm gonna wrestle this guy. I'm gonna knock him out because he's between me and the booze.
Yeah.
The next episode that we set up to watch was
you were
cordially invited. But there's one thing I wanted to say about looking for Parmok in all the wrong places.
Right.
Is that it's not one I had on our list to watch it tonight, but I just thought it was interesting as far as Klingon culture goes. The biggest takeaway from this episode is that apparently different Klingon girls who live in different provinces have different ways to date them. There's like a whole like how to date someone from the Kalas province for dummies, and Worf kind of walks through Quark on how to date this woman, like. By bringing a leg of some certain animal and throwing it on the table and saying, I want to provide for you and blah, blah, blah. It was like it was just kind of interesting about the dating rituals of Klingons.
Yeah, I think that that's true for in our world too. You know, if you want to date somebody, you know, in Jersey, you go, hey, you wanna hook up sometime?
and if you want to date Kim Kardashian, it's like, oh, I've got a lot of money.
Yeah. That goes a long way no matter where you're
in the
from.
South, yeah, you just ask him to hop in your truck.
Hey, you wanna...
Yeah, that's the wrong
place. Or, you know, yeah, sometimes the guys sit on the cows.
Wanna roll in the hay?
Sheep.
Would you like a roll?
Oh, not the cows. Just roll, get it right.
Roll in the hay. Okay.
Half of them are Scottish, okay? It felt familiar.
He winked at my cow. What's wrong with him?
Oh, my God. We're talking about bestiality now?
No.
Tangent acquired. Quick, Aaron, run back for the main topic.
Yes, I'm going to. The next episode is You Are Cordially Invited. This is actually a great episode.
This is a fantastic episode.
Where Worf and Dax get married. So, and we get to see all the intricacies of getting married. And in fact, there's really nothing much else about the whole episode except them getting married.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's nothing really that crazy going on. So,
well, other than Martok's wife is a total biatch. Yeah,
she's not a nice lady.
He's like, aren't you dead yet? He's like, oh, I will die and endeavor to die sometime this year. I'm just like, what kind of woman? He's like, you just want his stuff?
Yeah. after you've been married for a while, women are just like, you're so wrong.
Why are you still here?
I have older neighbors, and they're like in their like 70s, getting on their 80s, and they might actually be their 80s. And the lady's always wanting him to go out fishing because she can't stand him in the house. She's always like, "Oh, good, he's going fishing," you know. I don't so.
Thank God, I've got a few hours to myself.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where older couples get to a point. There's like they've been together for so long. They're like, oh God, you again? You had to walk into the living room. So they're getting married. We see a very much older Alexander.
Oh yeah, he's still the screw up of
the pride of the Klingon Empire,
knocking over drinks like an inept.
I'm sorry,
Jar Jar. He's the Jar Jar Binks of of Deep Space Nine.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. I stepped in some poo. Oh no. How did
On the Klingon ship? It probably wouldn't be hard to step in some.
How did a man? Yeah, I know, right? How did the man, the great resume of Worf, have a child like Alexander? And he does not even a pale comparison of Worf. Like, I mean, even if he doesn't want to follow in his footsteps, he's just like he is. Just,
to be fair, Alexander's like 10 years old.
In this, he seems older.
No, I mean, like, Like
when he's a kid, he
slept with Kalar in season two, and we didn't see him again until season four, and he was two, and he looked like he was six. So season four, and there's season seven, season five, six, and seven, mm-hmm. So that makes him five, and then this is season.
This is like season six or something?
Okay, so he's 11.
Yeah, six.
So
he's got to be older than that. He looks like he's 13, 14 years old.
Yeah, well, no. Looks like mid-teens, easy.
Well, no, but like, but he's actually like 11 years old because it's only like a year. I mean, Deep Space Nine. Actually, he's younger than that because Deep Space Nine starts around season six of TNG.
Now we need to look at the actual timeline years, though. Because
but wait a second. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get into the age thing, but I'm just saying is that.
The kids, the hybrid kids age really fast because Naomi Wildman's only like three, and she looks like she's 12, like in Voyager.
Yeah, you're right
so
about that.
So I mean, like I don't know why they hyper accelerate age the kids. I guess just they can write about them, but they never really explain why they age so fast.
Probably because child actors are a pain to work with, like when they're that young.
Yeah, but Alexander's like 10 max at this point.
I'm
willing to do further research on this just to double check. Not saying anybody's wrong, but I'm just kind of curious to see what's lost.
He's probably between 10 and 13.
Well, but here's the other side of it is that no matter what his age, if he's 10, okay, why is the Klingon Empire letting him to serve aboard a ship?
I don't think they think about it that hard, honestly.
Oh, okay.
Like, they hyper-accelerate the age of the kid, because the last time we saw him, he looked like he was six.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, we see him again, and he looks like he's maybe 18 or 19.
Even if that's the case, my point still is that, you know, usually you see your son, daughter of somebody, you're like, okay, I see traits that recognize in that person, you know. It might not be a complete carbon copy.
He doesn't have traits of either of his parents, because Kalar was a badass.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah,
anyways.
He doesn't.
Yeah, he's like that kid that the parents have, like, I don't know where you came from. You are not anything like me.
Recessive genes on both sides came together and said hello.
You know what's funny? I bet Kalar adopted him.
just a chap dwarf's ass.
He'll receive a letter in about 5 years saying, "Dear Worf,
yeah, by the way,
he's not really yours.
He's not really yours. Yeah,
love you.
How am I doing, by the way? You're dead.
Around the time of majority is when he would receive this letter.
Yeah. He's going to be. Alexander is going to go off on a another. He's getting reassigned to another ship, and he might not be back for quite some time.
So Jadzia convinces Worf to move the wedding up. On Deep Space Nine.
The easiest convincing argument I've ever seen to move up a wedding. He's like, we'll be around. It's like, okay, let's do it. And that was about all it was. Now, this is my thing. Should have been, instead of cordially invited, it should have been called Worf the Bridezilla. Because he literally is Bridezilla.
It's like, so true.
Oh, he does look good in that dress.
He's like, like even Jadzia says, like, you know, he's been just dreaming of this day since the day he was a little boy. He just wanted to.
It should have been Worf say yes to the dress.
Yeah. I will wear the dress.
And you will wear the boom armor.
You will wear my codpiece of honor.
And
they move up the wine. They're going to have the wedding in Quark's bar, of all places.
That's the only place in the place
to
get
wedding.
Why not
the holodeck? But the bar makes sense. It's right.
How
will
we talk that big?
And then they have to have Worf's going to have his bachelor party.
I just love the thing. They're just like, oh, it's a bachelor party, so this is going to be fun, right? And then it's like, oh, it's just a bunch of pain and suffering.
Yeah, it's the Kalhaya, and it's a mental and spiritual journey that lasts 4 nights before the wedding.
We alluded to this earlier in the episode.
And honestly, to me, this would be a deal breaker of being anybody's friend in a wedding. I'd be like, I'm sorry. This is just not working.
This is why Klingons don't have friends.
At the end, can I do something to you? Can we call this evens at some point?
And unfortunately, Jadzia has to deal with the preparations of wedding, and she has to win the approval of Worf's stepmother, whatever you want to call her. You know what? I don't know what her official title is. I mean, she calls her mother.
It's the matron of the House of Martok.
Right.
Since Worf was adopted into the House of Martok, since Worf couldn't get his honor back by the Sword of Kaelas, Martok adopted Worf into his family so that Worf now has honor. But as we find out later, Martok's family is just a bunch of farmers.
Yeah. So Martok's wife, Sirella, shows up, and she is not a nice lady.
She wishes her husband dead.
She's not warm. Let's just put it that way. I'm sure she runs a very tight ship. Like, I bet everything in the house, all of the dots are the
eyes. So you're saying Grelka should have gone to her?
I'm just saying that she definitely I bet you everything in the House of Martok is in well working order, and there is no problem.
Yeah, she don't take no BS.
No, no.
Oh, she doesn't even have to manage it. It's just done.
Yeah, no. So everything's probably happening, and that's what she used to. So they have to go through this process where where
Jadzia.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I always have a hard time seeing her voice. Has to basically redo all these rituals to actually make sure that she's ready and has her approval, Sirella's approval to be married to Worf.
So she makes some slight comment about going to Kronos and killing some animal and having Quark render the fat into tallow so that she can make these candles. And she's like, no, I didn't really. They replicated. And Worf's like, that's probably not a good idea. And then she comes in and she's like, you should do a better job at making your replicated candles not look replicated if you're going to be in my house.
Right. So they go through this thing, and Jadzia's got to recite all this history of the family, and she kind of like...
I love that she like does some research, and she like digs up and finds out that she's not as noble as she thinks she is.
I do like how just like some random Federation officer can uncover all this information within, you know, a day or two.
Well, you know, she probably has got a lot of knowledge from Curzon, because Curzon was alive before she was born, probably.
So, and meanwhile, Miles and Martok and Worf and Sisko and what's his name?
Bashir?
Bashir are all starving, and they're cutting themselves and bleeding.
Bleeding and hanging out over top of hot coals.
And Alexander, too. I'm sorry.
Alexander, yeah.
Alexander can't make it.
And they have to carry around their sticks with the pads on it so they can beat them once the wedding's over, because Kaelas was run off by people right after his wedding and almost died right after he got married.
Right. So this
is a spiritual fighting thing.
I liked Miles and Bashir's chant of killing Worf.
Yeah, I did like
it. I can see the future. I'm going to kill Worf.
This is my destiny.
This is the worst bachelor party ever. There's no women, there's no booze, and we can't eat any of the food.
Right. On the flip side, Jadzia's bachelorette party is kick-ass.
She has the Hawaiian guy. She has the Hawaiian guy throws some sticks around, and Rom and Lita are both like staring at his pecs.
Yeah.
Ooh,
and she even just wants him just to stick around just a little longer, just to be eye candy for her for a little bit longer.
And she's like,
She's ready to use.
He's got the unridged head.
I'll give you a little time off if you stay and play with me.
So cute.
I think he did stay over and sleep with her, because like I know there's several people left over
in Gorm.
Huh?
Who was it that was left in her room?
It was the guy twirling the baton who was half naked, and it was Morn and somebody else.
That's right.
Kira and Odo, I think.
Kira and Odo showed up. They're like,
they had a three-way with Morn. And
that is gross.
And the Hawaiian guy went in the room with Jadzia, and they had a fun night.
Yeah, I'm going to say that the Hawaiian guy and Morn got together. And
they both came out from behind the couch looking a little guilty. And I was like, oh, boys.
I didn't know it could do that, Morn. Anyways, during the bachelorette party, Worf's mom, Strella, shows up, and she's like, this is a complete...
Calls her,
this
what
is
was
not
it?
What you do.
What?
Yeah, it does call her a slut. I was like, whoa, this is daytime television.
I love her for that. Like, I love this woman.
You slut. that was strong words, especially for back then. It's like, that's not something you just threw around. Now that it's 2015, you can say whatever the hell you want.
So. Pretty much.
Being called a Rizalian slut would still make a couple of people raise an eyebrow.
Rizalian slut.
And the rest of them would have to go immediately and Google it.
Yes. Don't forget to Google Horgon.
So, Dax is like, no way. I ain't dealing with her anymore. She's going to – she, you know, pulled a knife on me, basically. And,
well, they changed her. So, I mean,
What's that?
She pulled the knife on her, and then Jadzia turned around and punched her. So, I mean...
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. That's what you always do to your mother-in-law.
Jadzia knows how to handle herself.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to deal with this lady. And Worf's like, are you out of your mind? This is like our she's not going to allow you to marry me now. He's like, what does that have to do with it? You know, and Worf's
just go do it.
And Worf's just like dumbfounded. It's like, well, if you don't get this, then you don't get me. And maybe we shouldn't be married.
And she's like, let's just go to Sisko and let's just get a regular wedding. Like, it's fine. I don't care.
Yeah.
I just want to be with you. And Worf's like, if we can't do it my way.
Can't do it my way. It's the highway.
Bridezilla, Worf, man.
I have my Klingon wedding.
Yeah.
I even want my wedding. I want my shoes to be purple. I even cut your boob window just a little bit bigger.
Yeah, and like all like romance movies and shows, they call the wedding off.
And then O'Brien and Bashir
are going to have the biggest
meal ever.
It's huge. This is epic meal.
Before they go to the Alamo.
Before they go to the Alamo, which we're going to get back to that in a second.
They have to get their energy back up before exactly. They go on such an adventurous idea.
He's like, Julian, since we haven't been eating, I've been having limp dick. And
I just don't have the energy.
I just need some calories, okay?
Julian's like, I'm augmented, I'm never limp.
I'm never limp. I'm hard half the time. I'm just walking around. So,
a steak and a Gatorade.
So, yeah, exactly. So, just when they're ready to dig in, Sisko comes in like, don't you eat that. The wedding's back on. And they're like, fuck.
But the way he goes and talks to her, he starts yelling at her. He's like, oh, you're not Curzon anymore, old man. And he's kind of he's like telling her he's not Curzon, but then he refers to her by the name he called him. So I think that's sending mixed signals.
Well,
but then whenever he sits down and starts talking to her, she's like, that's what I always liked about you, old man. It's like he puts some sexy voice on to talk to her.
Yeah,
I was like, what?
It's like, your relationship, Sisko, has never been sexy. Don't try it now, okay? It's not, like, unless you and Curzon were like knocking boots.
Well, no, him and Curzon were like sleeping, they were probably swapping chicks. Because like, I think they mentioned that a couple times. That they were like, you know, they got some.
Yeah.
Oh, so they were like doing like the foursomes.
Yeah, probably. So I mean, like, you know, he starts talking to her all sexy. He's like, oh, yeah, old man, that's what I always liked about you. I'm just like
the crack that she made about, and, you know, at least then you had hair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was funny.
I was although, like, really?
Although I think he looks badass without hair.
Yeah, no, I think
whenever he took it off his head and put it on his face, totally. It's like Heisenberg before Heisenberg.
Yeah, no, I have to
say that he was a good Klingon.
Yeah,
he's a badass looking Klingon.
He looked very good as a
and Klingon. And Kolomini looked like a little goblin, which is great.
He was awful as a Klingon. Just the worst looking Klingon.
It was like the reject Klingon club.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously Dax goes back and apologizes to Cirella, and they actually get married, and it's a beautiful ceremony.
Her dress.
And a beautiful dress, and...
oh, God. Like, beautiful.
It's a gorgeous dress, and she wore it, again, Terry Farrell, she wore it a year ago... The Las Vegas
to her own wedding.
No, like she at the last. I think it was the Las Vegas Star Trek convention last year. Michael Westmore got to paint the spots on her again, and she wore the wedding dress, and she still fit in, and she still looks amazing in it. Oh, cool. It was really cool. There's pictures online of her wearing it last year.
That's awesome. Yeah, so it's all's well that ends well. They get married. I mean, of course she'll die later on, but we won't talk about that.
We'll talk about that in a later episode, I'm sure.
Our next episode we have is...
Once More Into the Breach.
Once More Into the Breach.
This is our last episode with the Mighty Whore. Yeah. And this one doesn't have a whole lot to do with, like, Klingon culture and stuff like that.
Sort of like old man culture.
I just... Yeah, it's old man. Yeah. I just really wanted to include it because Kor is in it. And we did the first episode with Kor, and we've done every other episode with Kor in it. So we might as well give Kor his last hurrah.
Yeah, and this is kind of the sad thing because we kind of see how Klingons, and I think it's true in even our own culture, that we treat older people not so nice. We kind of kick them to the curb, and we kind of dismiss them and stuff like that. So
He starts showing signs of full-blown Alzheimer's in this episode, which is sad. Although I love the beginning of the episode, and like he gets
ridge brain.
I don't think I ever really picked up on it before, but at the beginning, O'Brien and Bashir are talking about the Alamo and the legend of Davy Crockett, and Worf's like, "Shut up, you're both wrong. You either believe in the legend and he died a hero because that's what the legend says and you believe it, or if you don't believe the legend, he was just a man and how he died doesn't matter."
Right.
And I guess I never really thought about it before, but like that sums up the entire episode.
And then there's like, we were just talking about gay sex. Right.
Worf's never been invited to that party.
No, they don't need that.
Only Vic Fontaine has been invited to that party.
They don't need that rich
party.
Dick. No.
they're not ready for that level of game.
Yeah.
They gotta work. They gotta do steps. They gotta work their way up.
Well, Bashir has to feel like he's on top of something.
Absolutely.
And then with Worf, he'd have to be a power bottom.
Yeah, pretty much.
He power bottomed
because he couldn't be a top of Worf.
We haven't seen a power bottom so powerful since Freddie Mercury.
and then Brian just a regular bottom.
It's like
even when he's with Keiko, he's still the bottom.
That's Keiko. That's understandable.
That's why they couldn't get. That's why they couldn't get pregnant before, because they were doing it wrong. Anyways, back to Kor. Kor comes to Worf feeling he's rejected. He's not feeling...
You made me beam the Sword of Kaelas out in the middle of nowhere.
I could have been a hero. I could have been living in luxury.
I could have done this amazing stuff. I could have been emperor.
Yeah. And so he asks Worf to help him to maybe get his last post so he can die in honor and won't have to, whittle away his last years of his life. As a nobody, and Worf asks Martok to give him some kind of commission, and Martok straightly refuses, flips out. In fact,
oh yeah, he's like
he's kicking over chairs, flipping tables every time he brings us up the core. So
he's not a happy Klingon.
No, and basically what happens there from there is he gets it out of Martok that Martok came from just a nobody family, and he was
farmer.
Yeah, he was going to become an officer, and Kor just rejected him.
Ruined my entire life.
Yeah, he's held a grudge for his whole life.
Yeah, and he just hated Kor all these years. And the sad thing is that during this, he wants to get his revenge on him, and when he finally gets this revenge. It's just not as sweet as he thought.
Yeah, he's just like, wow, this is like really horrible.
Yeah, because
it wasn't worth it.
What happens is Worf puts him on the bridge of their ship, and he's like third in command.
Yeah, they're doing a cavalry mission to do a behind the scenes strike on some Dominion outpost.
Yeah, trying to flush out the Dominion and get him to I don't know.
And his full blown something happens, and Worf gets knocked over, and somehow his mouth stops working, and Martok gets knocked over, and apparently no one can hear him yelling from the floor.
Worf's
apparently,
having back apparently, spasms apparently, on
apparently,
the floor.
Like apparently Martok laying on the floor, no one can hear him. So
And he starts wondering where Kang is, or trying to talk to Kang.
Have Kang do this, and Kang, and then and he's like,
and he thinks in the Caleb 5 or whatever it is, or
yeah,
4.
They're fighting the Federation.
Right,
must have been after his encounter with Kirk.
Yeah, yeah. So they're having this he's gotten this flashback, have this old battle, and everyone's like, "What the hell are you talking about?"
But they're listening to him because he's the Daha master, and they don't start to question him until he says something about Kang. And then Martok's been yelling from the ground this entire time: "Only one strike! Run away! Retreat! Tactical retreat!" And like no one's listening to him.
Yeah, couldn't talk loud enough under the explosions of everything.
Yeah, okay.
Well, anyway,
Klingons have three lungs, so get some air out somehow to get your voice out, you know, speaking. That's what your redundant organs are for.
Didn't have redundant eye. So he
had two to start with. That was spare.
Well, Worf comes to and he basically, you know, Martok actually throws his knife at him,
and Worf uses his ninja skills and catches it before it hits Kang.
Which is like, wow, how does that even happen in any world?
Worf's a ninja
or a Jedi, something. You know, it's like, how the hell did you catch that in midair? You know, he's like, got it.
Klingon Jedi, that would be scary as all hell.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
What about a Borg Jedi?
That'd just be weird.
No, at that point you just have the Empire.
Like instead of just a regular laser coming off the side, that's a lightsaber coming. So they just swing their head and they just cut people by looking at them.
And everything just gets destroyed every time they're in their X-wing fighter or whatever.
I'm trying to repair this.
No,
I destroyed my console.
So they.
That was bad. I'm sorry.
Shame on you.
I know.
So they're taken off, and they basically relieve Kor of his duties, and they run away. But the Jem'Hadar attack ships are chasing them.
There's 10 of them,
and somehow they can track them. And
even though they're cloaked, they develop some cloaking.
Yeah, that they can track their ships, and.
Probably just following the gas trail, like in Star Trek VI.
Yeah, they finally figured out the simple it's trick.
Like, gas! Oh, yeah, we just follow this.
Everything leaves a trail. Oh, yeah.
Ah, duh.
Well, that's what it is. So while they're in pursuit and running, they're trying to catch up with the Defiant and their Federation reinforcements. But
they're like going to be missing like 10 minutes, and they'll just get destroyed because there's only like three ships, and two of them are pretty screwed up.
Right, and they come into the mess hall and they kind of just start mocking Kor for what he did on the bridge, thinking that it was the battle with him and Kang on Caleb 4 or whatever the place was, and they were just putting him down. And Kor doesn't say anything, and you could tell he's obviously, you know, angry.
He knows that his Alzheimer's has gotten him in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're just embarrassing him more about it.
And
Martok is the one that breaks it up, ironically enough.
Well, yeah, he definitely, I don't know. He's definitely sees that it's like, you know, they're just beating up on this guy for no reason. So,
and that's the revenge he sought. He saw him have a hard fail, and it just didn't please him at all.
Right, right. So. It's actually pretty sad for that. So just to see that, but
especially since Kor was so cold and calculating the first time we see him in the original series, going back to the first episode of this 4-part series, he was just he was the best of the Klingons in the original series, like cold and calculating and just like totally on his game.
Right.
And to see him off his game as bad as he is now, it's really sad.
Well, it kind of brought up thoughts of mine because you know this, but my grandfather passed away this year, and he was a very large, just physically large man his whole life. And over a year ago, we were taking some pictures, and he was sitting on these steps, and he couldn't get up. He literally couldn't get up. I had to help him up off these steps, and I'm like, that's got to be crazy. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, I'm like, he was bigger than me. I mean, he was a big guy, you know, and he was just like, you know, that he was so powerful, and then one day you're just not.
Yeah.
You know, your strength has left you. And that's the age thing has got to be just play with your mind so bad. I mean, it's one thing to be weaker or not as strong, but then just that you can't stand up and, you know.
And to know that, to and, have the power to know it.
Yeah, and the next thing is, you know, like he was heavily drugged, but he was on his deathbed, and I was there with him in the hospital for a couple of days there, and it's just weird, you know. You see somebody like that, and you're like so powerful, and they just wither to nothing, and it's just like it's crazy. So age can really fuck with you, you know. It's a crazy thing. So that's what we see with Kor. It's like, you know, he was this great calculating, you know, hero of the Klingon Empire, and he
basically the Klingon Kirk.
Yeah, and then he just slowly just fades to nothing, and then he's being mocked by people because of his foolish.
It's not foolish. It's just it's Alzheimer's.
It was a moment of weakness, and it wasn't even. It was accidental. It's just, and you know, he would have already been embarrassed about that to begin with,
right?
Yeah,
right. And so there is a. I mean, obviously, this is a Klingon episode, but I think it touches on and any kind of race that you see them. You know, somebody who was once powerful just slowly, you know, deteriorate. So
yeah.
So, anyways, Worf figures out a way
to disrupt. Like hold them off for 10 minutes, get them to drop out of warp, and just keep them busy for 10 minutes.
It's a suicide mission.
Yes, it's a suicide mission, and they need to use some reverse inverse tachyon pulse from the
to make them drop out of warp. Yeah, or something.
And only one of the ships has the power to do it, and he only needs a crew of six. And he's like. Send me. It's the only logical choice. I started looking to see if he had pointed ears.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was funny too. They said that, and then Martok was like, "Yeah, you're right."
It's like logical. Like what? I think the only time I've ever heard a Klingon say this is the logical thing to do. It was awesome. It's like what? Are you sure? Are you Klingon?
Yeah.
Wait. Who are you?
And I love how he came up with a scientific way of doing things, because Klingons never have a scientific way of doing anything.
Right. No, I know.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going to suggest a bad idea, at least back it up, and he did a good job of it.
No, so basically, Kor takes Worf's place, you know, to get into this, to do his last battle, because he knows he's done, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much more he can do. And the great thing in this, and I don't know if you ever had this thing, is like I've worked along with older people in my life, and you see them like, they're like, how the hell did they do that?
Yeah.
And like he holds off
10 Jem'Hadar ships, the Klingon Bird of Prey.
Yeah.
Like these are like, remember, these are 100-year-old ships.
Right, right, right.
Like, because Kirk was flying around one in Star Trek 4.
Right, no. I mean, I'm sure there's been a few updates, but yeah, but it's just one of those things that, you know, like years ago I worked construction, and there was an older guy I worked with, and just the simple things he did, like he would just move things in just a slight way and it would just work. And it was like, obviously he'd done it for years, and it's just like little things like that, the skill level of things that you don't, like we take years to figure something out. And, you know, here's Kor, he's like, I can do it. You know, he knew he wasn't going to live. You know.
Yeah, but he went out with a huge, and the thing is that's what made his when they were making fun of him so hard, was because when he first came on the ship they were like, oh my god, it's a Daha Master, it's a Daha Master, and then they made fun of him, and then he held off 10 ships for the 10 minutes that they needed,
right?
And they're all like in awe. They were making fun of him just like, you know, like an hour ago, and now they're just totally in awe of him again.
And Martok's even
drinking to his name, and they all sing
a Klingons on the bridge. Drinking on the bridge.
Klingons wouldn't have it any other way.
Right. So
I thought it was kind of funny that it was his aide that brought the bottle on, and Martok looked at him and he was like, doing this on the bridge? What are you thinking? And he's like, well, you can celebrate their success or you can celebrate their death.
Right, right. Well, so I thought that was just a really you know, kind of cool, touching in its own way. I thought it had a lot of like callbacks just to human life, not just, you know, Klingons. But it was interesting to see, you know, the reaction and how people treated them. And even Kor has this thing about he says when they're mocking him in the mess hall. I don't remember exact words. I wish I actually wrote it down. But how, you know. You know, how life is so wonderful when it's so right off the
yeah, like, yeah, when you're, it's like, it's new and it's wonderful, then it just crumples up and like,
it starts losing its flavor or its how good it is as you grow older. So, yeah, great episode just to see, and a great last core episode too. So you know,
he went out with a bang.
Great send off. Yeah,
absolutely. It was a great episode altogether, and I loved how they foreshadowed the what was to come with that comment Worf made at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah,
very cool.
That wraps us up with Deep Space Nine.
We move on
to Voyager. Although B'Elanna Torres is a Klingon and she's in pretty much every single episode, there's only two real Klingon culture episodes.
Well, to be fair, first, she's not crazy about her Klingon heritage. And then secondly, they are kind of in the Delta Quadrant. Not a lot of Klingons, which we get proved wrong anyways.
Yeah, but I mean, they could have had like a holodeck episode where she's trying to explore Klingon culture and maybe seeing something we have never seen
she's
before.
She's not Chakotay. She just doesn't give a shit.
That far away from your planet and familiar territory, I think she's going to be more concerned with keeping the ship together to get them home.
Yeah.
It's the side of being an engineer in that type of situation.
Yeah, B'Elanna is like a brass nails. I just need to do this done. I don't care about all this.
Like, we're holding the ship together with duct tape and bubble gum, and we just ran out of duct tape, and I'm chewing the last piece of bubble gum.
It's so good, though.
Where's MacGyver? We could use some paper clips.
That's like the whole series.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the first episode is Barge of the Dead.
And this is where we get to see what happens after you die. Either you go to Stovacor, or you go to the other place.
Yes.
Greg Call.
And get to hang out with Feklar.
Yes, exactly. Easy.
The Klingon devil.
This is.
But before you get there, you get this long journey on this boat.
Right.
So, like, you die, and then you have, like, the after death vision where you're still living in your current life. And,
right.
And then the Klingons come in who are running the Barge of the Dead, the Klingon pirates, I guess you would say. They come in and they kill your dream.
They pull you out of it.
To pull you into the barge.
They go on the barge, and then they give you a mark on your cheek.
They brand you with the Klingon, like, they probably do it upside down so they know you're a failure of Klingon.
And then they take you to Gralkor, where you, I assume, just live a miserable.
You walk on all these hot coals to get through the door. It's just like that. If that's the steps to the door, I don't want to see what's beyond those doors.
You know, it's hot butt pokers all the way through.
it's like pain sticks 24/7.
Yeah. It's pretty nasty business, I can only imagine. But so
chafe your nipples with pain sticks.
Oh yeah.
That with battle armor they wear.
So so B'Elanna goes is this near death experience and she's on the Barge of the Dead and then
she sees her mommy.
She's mom there, good old mom. She doesn't have a good relationship with her mom.
Or her dad. She's
yeah,
got
which we
problems.
See. Yeah, yeah, she's a problem child, and mom's there, and she's like, "Oh no, you're going to Gralkor, and it's because of me. You did this to me, B'Elanna."
So somehow Klingons can send their parents to Gralkor if they don't live honorably enough. I'm like, what happened to personal honor and getting you into Stovacor? I don't understand. I guess maybe it's harder for women to get into Stovacor since not as many of them are in the army, maybe?
No, an honor-based society looks at honor in three different ways. It looks at familial honor, personal honor, and then honor of the empire. So you actually have to look at all the different aspects of what honor really is.
It's like being Catholic.
No, it's more like being a Shintoist. It's the Japanese samurai culture. Nice. Catholic is actually easier.
Yeah, you can.
You only piss off one god.
Yeah, true, but you have to pay indulgences and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, a lot of. It's like, oh, I did something bad. Oh, I can pay my way out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Catholic Church
Absolution?
Is the
okay.
Big on making themselves rich.
We're just making money, people. So
it prints money, indulgences.
they did. And
it's called a Ferengi.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much.
Fringy heaven.
is Catholic Church Middle Ages. Man, if only the episode where the Klingon, I mean, they go back in time instead of Area 51, if only they landed in medieval Europe, they'd be like rolling it.
Cork would be like put in as a new pope. Yeah, yeah.
Pope Cork.
He's like, people are just giving me money.
This is awesome.
Getting back to
Voyager
and B'Elanna's mother, they're on the barge. She said, you put me here because of your dishonorable behavior. And then B'Elanna is pulled back to Voyager back into sick bay. And apparently she was on a bad shuttle ride that she almost died on, and they revived her. She was in a coma. And this is where she had the vision. So she's obviously thrown off by this because she's
asking about all the stuff that never actually happened because it was all part of her before dream.
Right. Which we didn't really get into, but it doesn't really matter. She has this before dream about the Klingons and stuff like that. So anyways,
they find like the artifact and then things get a little funny on the ship.
Yeah. It just all starts to deteriorate. Like Janeway calls her like Lana or something like that, what her mom called her. Little things like start popping through that shouldn't be there.
Right.
Tuvok gets mad. The crew gets murdered.
Tuvok starts using a bat laugh, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, you did that really cool. And then was it 7 of 9 and the Doctor are singing a Klingon song.
Oh, that's so awesome.
That was great.
They did it really good, too.
They did, yeah. They sung great. I mean, those two sing a lot, and we'll talk about that when we talk about episodes where they sing. But, like, they both sing really, really well.
Yeah,
I love it when they sing.
They do that, too.
No, it was cool. So she decides that she's got to figure a way to get her mom to Stovacor.
And, of course, this being Klingon, there is a ritual. There's a ritual for everything in Klingonism.
They got it all figured out.
You can save your mom by going to Stovacor yourself and performing a ritual while you're still on the barge of the dead.
Right. So they basically do a flatliners plot where they put her to
induced almost death.
Yeah, yeah.
Captain, let me kill myself. No, that's stupid. But I need to.
This is my religion. I love how Janeway's like, well, if you wanted to sacrifice babies, then you couldn't do that either. And she's like, well, that's just ridiculous. And Janeway's like, and committing suicide isn't ridiculous.
I'll
pull
that
one. I thought Janeway was pretty good when she was like, and killing yourself is not stupid? What?
Right, right, right.
I thought that was pretty sweet.
He's an engineer we have. What the hell are you thinking?
Right. Well, but she goes along with it, of course, because
B'Elanna pleads a little bit and gets on her. No, maybe not.
No, it just was weird. That was a weird. It's always these little plot things they throw. It's like no, okay.
Okay.
You know, so they
have to protest for form's sake.
They got to fill that 50-minute time slot.
Well, it's like the same thing with the Civil War with Picard saying we shouldn't get involved, and then Picard's involved in the Civil War, you know.
Yeah.
It's the same idea, you know. Anyways, so they induce her almost death, and she's back in the barge. And may I say, B'Elanna's, like, a costume uniform.
It's so bad.
Oh, man, I thought it was kick-ass.
It's like a man's uniform, except they glued on, like, little bumps for her boobs.
I thought she looked cool. I was like, that actually looks cool.
Hers was really nice.
I liked it.
I don't think it was nearly as good as Larsa Arbatour's from
like
Generations.
The boob windows.
That's it's not that. It's just it looked like they just glued on like two little bumps on top of a regular Klingon outfit.
It was darker. It was like a black color, and it just had a different feel to it.
It was a rich suede look. Like it looked like it was like that deep wet, just fresh oiled armor. Like it looked good.
And I liked
like
her.
It moved well.
And with her hair all of a sudden got curly in these later on. I think it looked cool that way too. So I don't know. I just saw.
I mean, it looked like regular Klingon armor, except they just glued on those things on the front.
Of course, it looked like Klingon armor. It didn't have the gray in it. It was different. I just liked it. When I saw the first
scene,
there was
no silver.
When I first saw that scene when she's back on the barge of the dead and she's in that thing, I was like, man, that looks. It was like the whole thing just it was a great scene, you know. It was like with her.
Yeah, like I like how they. I did like how they put her in armor as opposed to the Starfleet uniform.
Yeah.
And then it was funny how her mom started wearing the Starfleet uniform instead of the Klingon uniform.
Right.
When she was back on the barge the second time.
It's like, I found these clothes you left.
she just vanished out of them.
They recycle everything around here.
Yeah. It's the barge of the dead. You can't, dead
beggars
can't be choosers.
Put on your daughter's soiled underwear. What? No.
No, do it now.
I don't want to. This is hell.
This is the beginning of it. It gets so much worse.
It's going to get so bad. You're going to be so fucked up. Anyways, so she's like, I'm going to trade place. You are going to go to Stovacor, and I'm going to take your place here. And
and then she's like, I'm gonna cheat. I'm gonna get revived, and then you're gonna be in Stovacor. And her mom's like, I'm not having any of this. I'd rather go to Grakal with the little bit of armor honor I have on my own than go dishonorably to Stovacor.
Right. And then, but of course, Kotar sees right through it.
Yeah. He knows. And then she's like, oh, I promise. No tricks. I'll do it.
Yeah, and so he sends her away to Stovacor, and she's going to Grelthor, and that's it. She's going to die. They bring her right to the gates.
And then as soon as she starts to step off on the gate, she wakes up on Voyager. But then it's like Voyager's hell for her.
Yeah, she's like, I'm in hell, not here again. This is eternity.
Neelix is bringing me fake gaga again.
Again. The doctor keeps talking.
And singing Klingon songs, which I don't like.
Yeah. So she's on I thought it was interesting at the end there, like, she's like, that she had to figure out her own way.
Yeah, then she goes back to the barge again, and they're like, oh, you've got to figure out your own way. You've got to do your own thing. It's like
– this is the part where it completely falls apart for me.
Yeah.
I get the meaning of
– It's like they're trying to, like, religion is what you make of it, I guess. But then it's just like, well –
It turns into an after-school special for me. This is the part where it's like, it was really cool up to here, and now I'm like, so this is just like, find your own path and you'll be all right. That's basically what you're saying?
I definitely think it falls apart. I mean, especially since Klingon lore and all this other stuff, built up the Klingons, it's very black and white.
It's all honor-driven.
Yeah, and then now it's like, oh, you can do whatever you want. I'm just like, it doesn't feel
right. Yeah, but honor's about choosing the better path. It's not a black or white situation sometimes. I mean, anybody that's heard the story of the 47 Ronin knows that it's not that easy. Sometimes you have to defy what culture states is right in order to do what is truly the correct and honorable thing.
Can you just like say, well, it's just your path? I mean, obviously, her mom was getting sent to hell because because B'Elanna wasn't doing things
she
right.
She failed in her duty to educate her daughter appropriately to her culture.
So that's why she was going to hell?
I believe. Because for me, this reflects more on a story that I heard with Greek cultures, with the ferryman, and how the ferryman was offered, somebody.
Yeah,
you were offered three opportunities, three tests. And the first test was the test of the family, and then the test of the individual. You had to sacrifice something. But it wasn't a matter of heaven or hell. It was a matter of choosing the better path, choosing the right path because it was the right path. Hmm. For you, not because it was the right path for another individual. Because, like, if you had to choose between one door or another door, you might pick the door on the left, but the person that comes after you chooses the door on the right. And the reason for that is because that is what feels like is the best for you. You are following what is your compass. So as long as you're being true to yourself, you're still being honorable to yourself.
Yeah, it goes along with a quote I heard some time ago, and I've kind of made it my life thing is if all paths lead nowhere, choose one with heart. So it's a point that if life is pointless or it seems pointless, choose the one that means the most to you, and that will
it's the journey.
Yeah, it'll give
experience
you
it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things I don't dislike the message. It seems like the narrative breaks down.
Yeah, the narrative kind of got fluffy instead of having a direction. It just kind of like
you literally induced death. You literally went to, you know, you went, you pretty much killed yourself.
Twice.
Yeah, well, one by accident, this the second time on purpose, and then you're like, you know, like, just choose your own path. I'm like, that's all you had to do? So, you know, I guess B'Elanna is one of those people that are always going to be conflicted inside because she's not happy with her Klingon side. She's got, you know, obviously parent issues and you know, acceptance issues. That's probably why she ran off with the Maquis at some point anyways, because she just didn't feel like she belonged anywhere. So she tagged along with the misfits.
That's probably why they said that.
It's
because
possible.
She spent so much time living in somebody else's shoes and then on a different path and then a different path and nothing of her own choosing.
Right.
And now she has that opportunity to do that. Sorry, when you were recapping that, I was like, well, wait, maybe that is really what they were trying to point out to her, is that she needs to make her own decisions, literally needs to make her own decisions and stop trying to categorize herself into one thing or another, but just be B'Elanna Torres.
Right.
Just be.
I think we all feel that way no matter what, though. We're all pulled in different directions. You know, you got to be certain way for this person, certain way for, you know, a certain way for your parents, certain way for your friends, certain way for at work, certain way with, you know, your significant other. And
different hats for different places.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, hopefully, you know, if you're centered enough that it doesn't pull you that disjointed, but obviously she felt that it was like she was getting pulled apart on too many
levels,
and too many directions, and it wasn't working for her. And maybe just the whole thing is a metaphor that she was in hell the whole time. But
I mean, we do make our own hells.
Yeah, but then again, did you have to induce death to figure that one out?
Some people, 2x4 application.
With B'Elanna's hardheadedness, probably she had to die almost
Klingon
twice.
Heritage involved, yes.
Yeah, like, you know, that.
This was the easy way.
Yeah. exactly.
Although I think some of my favorite parts of this episode were things Tom said. Just like, so what, you're a born-again Klingon now?
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, can't you just go to church? And I'm like, I can't see Klingons going to church. Like, I just –
it would be a great experience. There would be drinking and singing and fighting. Oh, God. Can I go to Klingon church, please?
Oh, Klingon church. Oh, you mean the what we talked about in the episode of Deep Space Nine where they just, like, or the Order of the Batleth episode?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
I would like to attend as a representative.
That's probably Klingon church.
But I always kind of thought it was more like at the monastery, but maybe a little more grander. You know.
We were going to wear our big, frilly, shiny robes and get drunk?
Right.
Oh, no, they don't get drunk. They just sweat and look at the fires and hope Kalos appears to them.
Or his clone.
Especially the clone.
So there you go. That's Klingon Hell. And then we have the episode of Prophecy, where this is the last in the timeline of Star Trek where we see Klingons. Although, you know, we talked about in Enterprise, we see the Klingons again, but of course, this is the last of the of Star Wars. Star Trek. That we actually see it.
You're infecting us.
I thought you said you didn't like Star Wars earlier.
I don't. Jedi bastards.
He's sulking. That's why he came up. He was thinking about it.
But yeah, so Prophecy is where we they run into a D7.
A D7
in the Delta Quadrant. It's
a generation D7.
What the hell?
They've had four generations of Klingons aboard the ship. Although, as long as Kor...
Those toilets
are going
to be awful.
Kor lived 150 years. So why... I mean, the first generation should still be there if Kor lived 150 years.
Well, you forget they're probably all killing each other, so...
Well, the drinking, the fighting.
The drinking, the fighting.
The pillaging.
Although, like, I think...
The tapeworms.
Although, the funny thing about this is that I feel like these are, like, the most... Worf-like Klingons we ever see.
Yeah, because they're removed from the Empire.
They're removed from the Empire, and so all they know is their history and their oaths and their honor and what they learned from books, which is all Worf had.
Right.
Since he didn't grow up in the Empire. So these I'm not saying they're the most honorable, but they're the most Worf-like Klingons, where they're focused on, like, their teachings and whatnot, and not so much the honor of the Empire.
Right.
Because they're on a pilgrimage to find the Parvakmach.
Right.
It's the difference between exploring new things and upholding the code of honor.
Right.
You know, they're following the rule book perfectly.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So they're just like basically Klingon pilgrims.
Yeah. Yeah, they're looking for a new world, and they're looking for a new savior, the second coming of Kalas, but through a different, you know, but it's the Parvakmach.
Right. So they come across Voyager, obviously open fire.
I understand their enemies, but I mean they're removed from the Klingon Empire, like, and a four generation removed from all of that. I just feel like I guess it's just from their history books, but
they're just probably just looking for a good fight. I mean, they're Klingons. They're like,
they're bored.
They're like, whoa,
something new to fight, Federation. And then they're bashing each other in the head.
How did they survive that long in just a lonely D7?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I guess they did cloak probably most of the time.
Yeah.
I guess they only picked the fights that they thought they could win.
Hey, those are the Borg again. Stay cloaked, stay cloaked, stay cloaked, stay cloaked. Stay cloaked.
Don't say anything. Drop that pin.
Shh. Shut up. Don't drink and sing songs too loudly or the Borg will hear you.
So,
Stories for nighttime. Oh, my God. Wow.
So they,
nobody can hear you scream in the airlock.
There you go. So they basically so they're looking for is it considered like a messiah type of character? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're looking for a messiah. They're looking for their savior who they'll discover unborn, and there's all these different criteria that will determine that'll prove that this is the messiah.
Right. And once they find out B'Elanna is pregnant, they're like, this has got to be it.
They detonate the ship and they beam over 200 people in 30 seconds.
Yeah, Klingon party.
This makes no sense. Never in Star Trek have they been able to emergency beam that many people that quick.
Right.
Even the Enterprise D, which is like, you know, like, which holds.
B'Elanna invented the boner lock. She can teleport.
There you go.
200 people. Like, she's got this.
Yes, you referenced the boner lock. Yes. Well, but B'Elanna wasn't the one beaming them up this time.
Well, she might have. But the other thing was, I was thinking
the protocols.
Couldn't you just like beam everyone up and hold them in the buffer pattern and then like put them. Slowly put them on.
Oh, that's just me. I'm going to put you in the cloud storage.
Yeah, put you in cloud storage. Yeah. I mean, that's what Scotty was like in Relics.
Yeah.
At that point, the doctor would start to break down because you're overloading all the buffers.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, it's just so weird because, I mean, the Enterprise D, they were evacuating people several different times. Like, oh, we can't get out quick enough. And, you know, I'm just like, and the Enterprise D's got to have like more than twice as many transporter rooms as Voyager does, since its crew complement is over 1,000 and Voyager's is like 150.
Look, Dave.
The Klingons are probably helping from their side.
Look, Dave, all I'm going to say is that, as we've pointed out more than once, some of the writing on Voyager gets a little lazy.
You're just supposed to use your, you know, use your creative.
Yeah.
You could do it.
Just go with it. No, I can't.
Suspend your belief for just 10 seconds. Come on.
But it contradicts other times. I've had to suspend my belief that transporters existed and they took longer to beam people out.
Just turn your brain off.
Just turn it off.
No.
Just turn it off.
No.
You could do it.
Little Holtz's balls. The balls.
Nice. So,
well played.
That doesn't make sense. And
it's a Lord of the Rings podcast.
We've been talking a lot about Lord of the Rings. We better knock this shit off.
Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Star Wars. Oh my God.
Lord of Star Wars.
Like, wow, I almost covered all of
Sith
them.
Sith Lords.
Hey, we're all nerds here. We can talk about what we want.
Synthaholics.
Synthaholics.
Just means we're drinking.
We can talk about things and things.
So,
justify it.
Yes.
So they're not. When they find out that it's a half, that she's half human, and that the baby's with
a quarter human. Oh, they call it a mongrel, and people are wanting to throw a revolt.
Yeah. So they're not crazy about this.
Even have enough blood to really be called Klingon at that point.
Right. Which, if it was up to B'Elanna, it wouldn't anyway. So,
yeah.
As we learned about it when she gets pregnant. But anyways, So the Klingons are happy. They're not happy about this development, and they're going to have a
mutiny.
A fight to the death with Tom Paris. With Tom.
And then it's so great. Tom's like, "Oh yeah, I'm going to do it." And then behind closed doors, he's like, "I'm not really going to do it. This is stupid. I just wanted to like say I would so that they would believe in our child."
That's the way Tom Paris operates, anyways.
By the seat of his pants.
Yes.
In the holodeck. On a fast ship.
So Tom Paris gets dressed up in his Klingon attire, and he gonna fight the Klingon officer. So was it T'Growth? I think it was. Anyways, but they get into their little battle conflict.
And then he starts huffing and puffing and blows himself down.
And that's it for it. That's technically kind of wins, right?
Yeah, Tom wins because the Klingon huffs and puffs and blows himself down.
Yeah.
And it turns out that they've got a disease. They've all got some disease that they picked up in the Delta Quadrant, I'm assuming.
Going through fluidic space.
Yeah, I was going to say they had to go by the fluidic space in the Borg at some point.
Species 8472.
Been there.
Yeah, done that.
Kim's like, "Oh yeah, I did that a long time."
Tendrils in the nose.
In the nose and out the mouth.
So they deposit them off into a new planet to live on, and hopefully they can just have a normal life. I kind of felt bad for the Klingons just being stuck out there, but they did kind of put themselves out there. So
yeah, so this disease is called the Nerette, and it turns out it's transmitted only to Klingons, so that all the humans are safe.
Except
but B'Elanna. They say B'Elanna and
baby.
The baby are – they have this Nerette, and it basically they don't call it a disease. They just call it old age, but the doctor's like, "This is definitely a disease."
Yeah. And you know, hopefully they live a decent life down on the planet.
And Harry Kim teaches them how to use the transporter. He's like, "Yeah, this is like, it's very similar to yours." And, "Oh, was that the pattern lock?" "Yeah, this is the pattern lock." So the Klingons try to throw a coup.
Right, of course.
Yeah. Because they don't like the mongrel-blooded savior and all this stuff.
Right.
So Harry Kim gets shot with a phaser. Unfortunately, it's not on kill, so he's still alive at the end of the episode.
What happened? He's laying on the floor.
It's so sad. He always lives through getting shot.
It did really hurt. I'm just trying to take a nap on the floor.
Put him out of his misery.
I was just hugging the floor. I felt bad.
Put him out of our
misery.
He
gets walked on all the time.
So then they beam everyone out of engineering, and they beam the couple Federation people who are in the transporter room down to the planet. And then they keep trying to beam people off on the bridge, but apparently they put
some kind of shield or something, yeah.
But it's not even that good of a shield because they're still able to beam in.
Yeah.
So they beam
like
in.
A one-way mirror.
Again.
They beam in to the bridge.
The writing gets a little lazy here.
Yeah, they beam into the bridge because they think that's going to be a good idea.
Yeah.
And they get easily taken over, and he wants to get killed, and Janeway's like, "Ain't no death blows on my bridge."
Sister.
No killing on my bridge.
Yeah.
You're going to have to clean that up.
Yourself after you're dead. And I don't think you can do that.
You know you shit your pants after you're dead.
You just go twice the mess, man.
And Klingons have double the anuses because that's going to be a double messy. Redundant organs, remember?
Oh, my God. Those Klingon toilets. So
much fun.
Yeah, so
the doctor finds out that the baby isn't really sick and is able to make the stem cells of the baby with its hybrid humanness and cure the disease of the Klingons.
Right. So maybe it is their savior after all.
Yes. So the baby is the savior of the Klingons after all. And they reward the baby. They give them a very special Bat'leth.
Yeah.
And this Bat'leth is the exact same prop as the Sword of Kalas.
Right. Yeah. Modeled. Maybe they picked it up along the way.
Well, the funny thing is,
this is laying around in space.
Right.
The funny thing is, like a couple episodes later, you see inside their quarters again, and it switches to a regular Bat'leth. It's no longer the Sword of Kalas prop.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you like watch this episode, watch a couple, like watch the rest of the season, and then every time you see them in the quarters, it's like it switches back to a regular Batleth and not the Sword of Kaelas.
Wow, crazy.
So that's just little things I notice when I'm watching Star Trek.
Yeah. That's when you know you've watched way too much Star Trek.
What? We watch Star Trek? Yeah. Too much? Is that a thing?
It is for me now.
Are you singing the songs in your sleep yet?
No. Not yet.
Okay.
Soon. Very soon.
I almost know all the Klingon drinking songs. Just give me another day.
I know, right, exactly.
Or another drink, one or the other.
And speaking of having another drink, and we might need one after this.
You are the most beautiful woman in the galaxy. You don't know how long I've wanted to tell you that.
But you're afraid.
Yes.
Of me?
Of us, of what we might become. Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
Dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
Careful. Putting me on a pedestal so high you may not be able to reach me.
Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my night.
We lost two more relays. I can't!
Shut up, kid.
And in Prophecy, this is a combo. This is a Neelix scores and Harry fails.
Yeah, right.
All the Klingons are on board the ship, and this woman I don't remember her name either, but she accuses a man of stealing Gah from her her plate, and they get into a scuffle. Neelix tries to get in, but they both push him aside, and then Carrie Kim comes up and grabs her, and she's like, stop. And, like, and then she's like,
I couldn't. We're going to be talking later.
So later you see Kim go to the infirmary, and he's got a bite mark on his cheek. It looks like a chipmunk bite because it's just two little scratches. I'm like, how is that a Klingon bite?
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, the doctor gives him a pad. The doctor gives him a pad saying, you're cleared. You're cleared for sex with aliens.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
run
yeah.
it by the captain first just to make sure she's good.
Right. Oh, jeez. Yeah, and but of course
Harry Kim somehow is threatened by a woman taller than him with boob windows.
Yeah,
so
boob windows. He's like,
I don't know what to do. Every time he's confronted.
Yeah.
Neelix is apparently got the hots for this lady, and so Carrie Kim's like, she says, have you seen her? Have you seen her? He's trying to avoid her, and she comes up, and Neelix is like, play along. And Neelix starts threatening him and like punching him, or he doesn't really punch him, but he kind of shoves him against the wall,
right? Yeah, yeah.
And shows his dominance over Harry.
And
so
she loves this. This is like Klingon aphrodisiac.
And he's like, he's eye level with her boob window, but he's like trying to look up.
Right.
And they do the deed, and he is because everyone on Voyager had to bunk up. He's bunked with Tuvok.
Tuvok, right?
And so Tuvok's trying to get into his quarters, and you hear them throwing stuff and breaking stuff, and they were doing it, and
they basically trashed Tuvok's place.
It's so messed up. It's so bad.
And even Neelix comes out. I think he's got a black eye, and he's like a little scratched up too on his face.
He's like growling at her. He's like, like as she's leaving, and I'm gonna miss her. And he's like, oh, and he's like all super happy and like almost falling over. He's so giddy from all the sex he's been having with this Klingon woman.
Yeah, and Neelix. I mean, okay, she wasn't the most attractive lady, but then he also got Cass too. I mean, what does Neelix have? That is,
he understands the Klingon culture. He was able to trick her into thinking that he was a badass because
he speaks their language.
And Harry Kim is the wussiest person on the ship, and Neelix is only slightly less wussy than him.
Yeah, but Harry should at least get the pity card at least once by now. I mean, you know, mathematically speaking, by now he should have accidentally fallen into it.
Yeah,
well, accidentally.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, he does have sex in two episodes that I know of, and one of them I don't want to talk about it yet because this is it's like a score and fail for Harry in this one. I don't want to talk about it whenever we do the episode. That'll be a fun one.
Yeah. Well, anyways,
actually, both times he gets laid, it's like it's a score and a fail for him because bad things are always associated with him getting laid.
I think most bad things
happens with pity sex.
I think most things are bad things happen to Harry Kim.
It's like coercion sex. Yeah, but Harry Kim is definitely the target for bad things to happen.
Yeah, he's like the bad luck charm of the Voyager.
But I just love it. Neelix is trying to help Tuvok clean it up, and Tuvok is just like wanting to explode. He's like, there's got to be like Neelix junk all over the Neelix messes and Klingon messes of bodily fluids all over his couches.
We did it on there.
And chairs.
We did it over here.
And the table that they broke. And
just go ahead and figure that there isn't a single sanitary surface.
And Tuvok's just got to be like inside his head. He's like screaming.
He's flipping out.
He's like, just go. Just go.
Just go. It is great. This is probably, honestly, maybe Neelix's finest hour. So
this is Neelix at his only good point.
Yeah,
probably got it on with a Klingon lady.
Yeah, you can't.
You gotta feel proud of him, even if you.
God, I don't want to know what that kid looks like.
The ugliest child in the universe.
Oh my gosh, it's like a
weird... The ridges and the freckles will be entertaining.
The ridges and the freckles and the little like sideburn things, his whiskers. Oh, that's going to be the ugliest little thing.
The Klingons are going to love it, though. Facial hair and all the appropriate ridges.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
nothing sexier than that.
So there we go. We have touched on so many Klingon episodes. So much information to go over, so much stories to talk about. I think we've touched on all the important parts, at least.
Yeah, most of the important ones that deal with Klingon culture and their race in general. There's lots of other Klingon episodes that we have not talked about.
Oh, right. But, there was things that we just – there was no sense of – because there wasn't anything different that we're getting from those episodes, right? Yeah. So
But I'm sure we'll talk about these episodes in greater detail on their own at some point in the future. Write us in. We've only had one real, fan-requested topic, and that was the Boo Sound of Bozeman, where we talked about the difference between Zefram Cochrane and the show and Zefram Cochrane and First Contact. Right. So, our email address is syntholics@yahoo.com. Email us in topics or on our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/synthaholics. Tell us what you want to hear about. We're happy to come out with our own content, but
if you have any things that you want us to explore or just think it'd be funny to talk about, we're definitely open to different ideas.
Or if you have questions you want us to answer, email us. We'll read them on the air and we'll answer them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Even if you just want to make us argue amongst each other, that's fine too.
Like we started off on this episode doing,
Right. If you whatever makes you guys happy.
Dave's always good for a good argument. He's down for it.
Yes, I am. and I will probably disagree with a lot of things and they'll disagree with me because I think I'm probably the least normal, I guess, when it comes to like... my opinions on Star Trek. My opinions are probably the more radical.
I think you're more. You're very. I think in your opinions, you're very. You're very black and white.
Yes.
I take a very roundabout things. I see different aspects of it. That I can say like, oh, this is a little different, but it's still good. But you're like, that doesn't make continuity sense, and
it must die.
It doesn't fit the timeline.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's your rules or your book?
Obviously, Alexander should still be 10. When they're doing that that episode. So
yeah, it's just like he's only like two or three when you first see him, maybe.
He actually looks a little older than me.
Oh, but he's like 6 or 8. The actor is like 6 or 8.
Right.
But he's like a 2-year-old.
Right.
Based on like the timeline, because the series only takes place over 7 years, because in Generations they like whenever Data is telling the joke to Geordi, it's like that was 7 years ago. He was referencing Farpoint.
Right.
So I'm like, it's 7 years. I mean, it backs itself up that 7 years.
You're saying that generations should actually make sense?
Most of generations is a giant plot hole. But that one reference is at least referencing itself, which means it's, you know, it's backed up by continuity.
You hope.
Because they could always just go back through and go, well, this is no longer canon, and this, and this, and this. And, oh, by the way, this new thing that you don't know anything about, yeah, this is what's real.
Well, I would love to have, like, Larry Nemechek and the Okudas and a couple other, the Star Trek elite who have spent a lot of their lives working on Star Trek and know it inside and out. I would love for them to go through, like, the entire series and, like, you know, like, do the black and white thing, like, find out what's canon, what's not canon, like, what contradicts itself. That way they can get removed and make a Star Trek Bible. That way, when they make a new series, they can just refer to the Bible.
I'm sure there is a website out there that has that all worked out. It has to be out there right now.
Oh, at least one. And there's probably, like, five or six, and they're been in a continuous war.
Exactly.
Like, I now want to go and find this, so right, I can just see you go, wow, this is the best flame war ever, and it's been going on for years.
Yeah, it's been just...
Well, but see, internet flame wars and internet opinions aren't the same as the official people writing it down. And yeah, I think that would be nice.
It doesn't mean people actually take it as fact, though. There's
can I just point out that the official people are the ones that write the episodes that fuck everything up?
Well, I don't think... Larry Nemechek and the Okudas never wrote any episodes. Okudas worked on, like, the visual design of Star Trek, and Larry Nemechek, like, wrote a lot of stuff as a fan, like, you know, trying to keep up with the Star Trek continuity.
Right.
And he wrote a lot of, like, the Next Generation, companion guides and stuff like that. So I don't think he wrote any of the episodes that I'm aware of. He might have, but
I'm just saying I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying that all the official people, we see that constantly, and that you would think that there's somebody there to cross check things like, oh, that doesn't make sense continuity wise. That doesn't make sense continuity wise, but. Obviously, whoever was getting paid to do that wasn't doing a superb job.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Now that you know, Star Trek is dead as far as new television shows go, like, you know, have someone, you know, like, clean the canon up so that a new show can be made. I think that's what's partly so intimidating.
It would have to be worth it. It would have to be worth it for them to even consider doing it, because they only do that for anything that's active.
Yeah.
Like, going back through and cleaning up the Star Wars timelines, that only happened because of the 1, 2, and 3 movies were coming out, and they're like, oh wait, we have this huge cluster right in the middle of crap we're gonna have to explain. Oops.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. I mean, in order for new Star Trek to be made, the canon needs to be cleaned up, because I think it's too intimidating to make new Star Trek at this point, because the canon is so convoluted.
Right.
Agreed. It's just they're going to have to be able to find money in being able to do it. It would have to be worth it for them.
Well, that being said...
That's a topic for a different episode.
The Klingon the Klingon run is over. Have some blood wine. Have some gawk. Take your bath with and battle your enemies.
Do some cool moves, you know.
Take down, defeat your enemies. And
do your victory pose.
And find your way to Stovacor. So,
and don't hang out with Theklar. That's a bad idea always.
Theklar's a bad man. Kapla, everyone.
Kapla. Thank you all for listening. All my music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at synthaholicduo. If you'd like to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan.
You can follow me, Aaron O'Brien, at Blackbird2004. Faith, where can they find you?
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg.
And please subscribe to us. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. And if you have a chance, please rate and review so we can improve. And any feedback is welcome. And so we can make the show even better for you.
Live long and prosper, guys.
At the stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
We're going to take a quick break.
Quick commercial break, guys.
I gotta pee.
This is brought to you by toilet paper.
By TP.
TP. TP for my mumble.
Playing this word out in Japan. You know, and we'll just say the word is Tusami or something like that. Tusami, Tusami, Tusami. He's like, oh, man, I must be amazing.
too small.
So the next day, he's out with his Japanese businessmen, and they decide to go out golfing. And the one Japanese guy hits the ball, and it gets, like, right onto the green. And he goes, Tusami! And he goes, wrong hole?
I love it.
That's the only joke I know.